You are now listening to the Build a Brain podcast with Dr. Jeannie Zayer. Join the quest to shape an efficient brain that fires on all cylinders and runs like a fine-tuned machine. You are now in the capable hands of an international presenter and a pathologically optimistic brain builder. Dr. Zayer will give you the right blocks to build that 3 pounds of cerebral muscle for you, your child, or the young adult you teach or mentor. Block by block, thought by thought, now is the time to build a better brain. Let's get started.
Welcome, friends, to Build a Brain podcast. Can't tell you how excited I am about today because I have someone who's very, very special to the Feuerstein community, and you're going to love this story. I have with us today Monsignor James Gilg. So he says I can call him James. So James, welcome to the Build a Brain podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Jeannie. I'm very honored to be part of it all.
Yeah, you're helping kick off season 3 of the Build a Brain podcast. We did season 1 was all 28 cognitive functions. We did every one of them, got their own podcast. Then for season 2, we did all the parameters of mediated learning. And Kibwe and I kicked around a lot of ideas and we thought, oh, interviews, because there's fascinating people in the Feuerstein world and you are certainly one of them. So thank you for agreeing to be interviewed today. I want to start at the beginning of your story. Would you share with our listeners a little bit about where you grew up and especially when did you know you were being called to be a priest in the Roman Catholic Church? How did that all happen?
I grew up in a small community in north central Nebraska. It was Atkinson is the name of the town, and I lived southeast of the town, 11 miles on a farm. And during my young days, I always was kind of fascinated by the devotions that my mother would say and the prayers that she would engage in. And I always loved to go to church. Of course, we lived in the country and going to church was a big deal because we got to see lots of people. But I always felt very comfortable in a religious environment. And that kind of continued during my high school days. I went to school in a one-room schoolhouse in rural Nebraska.
Wow.
But then when I went to high school, it was a Catholic high school. And so we would periodically have sessions in the church. We would go to church for prayers and things. And and I always felt very good about that when that opportunity came. And so I knew that I was kind of interested in religious things. And then in my small town, there was, in those days, there was a young priest that was there as a first assignment, as an assistant to work in the school. And in addition to liking church, I also liked school. I very much liked to study and to do all kinds of educational things. So I would look at him during my high school years and say to myself, that looks like a pretty good life. I like church and I like school. And here he is. He's a teacher and a priest in the school. And maybe if I choose that line of work, I can continue in that area in my own life. So it just grew on me during the high school years. That was what I wanted to do. And when I graduated from high school, then I went into the seminary and liked it and just continued on and then was ordained. And I was very fortunate that when I was in theology studying, it was kind of an accident where you went. You didn't have any choice on where you went to study theology. The archbishop would decide. And I was very fortunate that he sent me to the Catholic University of America to engage in my theology studies. And one of the deals there, one of the sort of catches to that assignment was that you would also then go and get a master's degree in education as you studied there. So when I was ordained a priest, I had a master's degree in education plus my theology and, and my religious background. So I was assigned to a parish in Omaha with a Catholic high school connected to it and found out that of all the things that I was engaged in ministry, teaching in the Catholic school was the one that brought me the most satisfaction. So I was hoping that I could stay in that kind of a field mm-hmm. all my life, and I was. So for some 50 years as a priest, I was involved with high school work almost all the time. So I was quite lucky about that.
Yes, yes, yes. God knew where you were supposed to be.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's where I wanted to be. And so I was very fortunate.
Yes, yes. How many brothers and sisters did you have growing up?
I had two brothers and two sisters. I was the second one. I have a sister who's older, and then myself, and then the other one's underneath.
You're in the same birth order. I'm number two as well. And so I had to keep up with my older brother, who was a scholar and studied all the time. So I think that really motivated me to do the same. And that's one thing I've appreciated about you, is you're a learner and you always have insight. And I think it's that combination of that rich theology background and that teacher heart that you have that make for a really, really good mix.
My sister was always a good leader for me, too. She was very bright and very studious, and so I was always kind of trying to catch up with her all my life.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got to share with you, but I was raised Methodist, you know, in a Protestant church. But my brother found this university here in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It was called St. Francis College. It was for nuns who wanted to be teachers. And then they started expanding in the 1960s and started adding a lot of education. They started allowing men to attend and everybody could come. So by the time I got there in 71, because of course I followed my brother's footsteps. So I wanted to be a teacher. They had an excellent education program. And then he went on to be a teacher of chemistry at Notre Dame University.
My goodness sakes.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was a tough one to walk, you know, follow those footsteps. And then you have helped me a lot. I've had the honor of working with a seminary here in the United States with seminarians, because this is not an easy course or course of study. When you want to become a priest, you've got a lot of philosophy and history and theology. You've got it all. And so if you have trouble focusing, if you have a little bit of an ADHD brain, then you've got a lot. So I've really enjoyed working with the seminary, and you've really helped me with that. So I've loved it. It's been such good work.
Yeah, I think that is so exciting. I think that's just so exciting.
Yeah, you were the first one I wanted to call when I found out that I was going to get to go to that seminary. I'm like, oh, I got to tell James. He's going to be excited. So, yeah, and I think I had you even talk to some of the staff there.
Yeah, well, yes, I talked to the rector of the seminary and then someone else who was interested in bringing the Feuerstein mediated learning experiences to the seminary. And so I did visit with him and gave him a little bit of my background. And I did see, somebody from the area up there, who was visiting Omaha last Christmas and was very aware of the program and spoke very highly of what was happening in the seminary.
Awesome.
So that was nice to hear as well.
Yes. Well, thank you for that. They went ahead and hired me, the crazy lady from Indiana. So I think you helped with that. So thank you. The one seminarian we keep in close contact with, we text. I recently was in Rome and I visited and toured, of course, the Vatican and the Sistine Chapel. And I'm taking pictures and sending them to David. And he says, I knew you'd love it, because he knows I love history. So yeah, we stay in close contact with him and follow him. He has promised me, because he's had dinner with Rick and I when he's been to Fort Wayne. So he has promised me that Rick and I are going to get invitations to his ordination. I've never been to one.
Is it coming soon?
It will be May of 2024, I believe.
That's pretty soon, yeah.
I know. So I'm so pumped for that experience. Yeah. So let's talk now about the big topic. Of course, let's go with first Boys Town. Did you find Boys Town first and the Father Flanagan High School, or did you find Feuerstein first?
Well, it was kind of at the same time. Boys Town, as you know, is an organization that was started over 100 years ago by Father Flanagan, and is a home for young boys originally, and now, of course, it's a home for boys and girls both, through many, many kinds of difficulties in their lives. But Boys Town has always had a school on the campus, and the Forestine program was never in the school on the campus, but from 1980 until about 1996, Boys Town had an off-campus school, and that's where I came into the picture, and that's where Forestine program was used for for 8 of the years that they ran that school. And so a little bit of the background of Father Flanagan High School. There was originally a Catholic school that was started in 1968 in North Omaha for high-risk youth to engage in alternative methodologies and try to make school work for a lot of kids who were having difficulties. And I came into that program in 1972. And so I experienced, you know, the reality of poverty, culture, you know, the challenges of youth. And so it was quite a different from the regular Catholic high schools that I had been involved with before. So it was a real learning experience, needless to say, and kind of a shocking thing for a while. But after being there and gradually building a staff of people who were able to begin to make some dents into the educational situation, we learned a lot of things about how to do it, how to make things happen. And then we suddenly got the message that the city of Omaha, or the state of Nebraska, the city of Omaha, had decided that they were going to extend a freeway through this inner city, and they was going to wipe out all of our buildings. So all of a sudden, we had this crisis on our hands. And so, you know, I gathered people. We had we had a lot of credibility in the community in terms of our own constituencies, in terms of the inner city culture community, in terms of the Catholic community. And we also had earned some respect from the corporate community, the people who were really interested in the health of the city as a whole. So a lot of people said to themselves, we have to keep this place alive. We have to keep this school growing. Yeah. Okay, so in the course of going back and forth and finding ways to make that happen, we were fortunate that our initiative with Boys Town came through, and the leader of Boys Town then was a priest named Monsignor Robert Hupp, and he then, in conversation with us and other people, came to the conclusion that this would be a project that was very appropriate for Boys Town to adopt and to make happen. So he very generously told me one day, I will come in and rescue you and build you a new school building, and you can stay around.
Yeah.
And so when the new school building opened in 1983, then it was renamed Father Flanagan High School.
Wow.
And the old Dominican High School.
Yeah.
So it was a off-campus school of Boys Town then, and then the campus school, the main Boys Town High School, never did adopt Forestine. But I had heard of Forestine a year or two before Father Flanagan High School opened in 1983. So I was given some information about Forestine by a colleague who was an educational psychologist, and he was very aware of our needs at the in the school, and said to me one day, have you ever heard of this man named Forestine? And there was a chapter in some book that describes some of the some of the theory and methodology of Forestine, including a page of dots. Okay, and so he said, just look at this page. Isn't this interesting? And so anyway, so I read that and I thought to myself, this is really fascinating. I really want to learn more about this. And so I told him that I was really fascinated by that. And then a few months later, he said, guess what? Reuben Forestine is going to be in Riverside, California in the summer of 1982. And they're going to be doing training in this program. Why don't you go out and check it out? So I was very intent on doing that immediately. So I went out there in the summer of 1982, and was trained then in level one of standard FIE, mm-hmm. and of course gave the theories. He was on the scene. Milton Hoffman was the trainer,
mm-hmm.
and so I had the real people there.
You did.
It was so fascinating. And so as I was going through that training and during the week, I said to myself, I want this in my school. I want this in my school.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back. And so school year of 1982-83, and that was the last year in the old building. So I mm-hmm. brought my staff together that fall. And I said, now, this is what I've learned this summer. This is what I think we ought to do.
What was your role at that time? Were you
the principal?
Ta-da. Oh, that's awesome.
Yes, that's why it could all happen, because I was the principal. And in an independent Catholic school, the principal pretty well did the decision making.
Yeah.
I didn't have to go to a board, and I didn't have to go to a lot of other people just to get permission. So we decided we were going to do this. So in the summer of 1983, as we were moving from the old building to the brand new building, Father Flanagan High School, renaming the school, getting mm-hmm. lots of publicity about opening this mm-hmm. new program, all right? And so all of my staff then during that summer were trained in FIE, mm-hmm. The standard FIE.
Wow.
And in terms of organizing the curriculum for the new school building, then every teacher was a teacher of FIE. Every student would take FIE every, year. So we brought FIE into the school culture. And first of all, of course, it was just the classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We had FIE class. But then as we lived with the program and did more of the program, the whole mediated learning philosophy, methodology mm-hmm. just became to be focused on the school.
And yeah.
Everything became, integrated into
beautiful.
that framework. So we started with in the fall of 1983, Father Flanagan High School opened for the first time, and all the students were taking IE, and we continued to do that, all levels, all three levels, and every student
wow.
would be taking the program. Got through all of the 3 years of the instruments, then they became mentors in the classroom for the youngsters. And so everybody was involved in IE every Tuesdays and Thursdays, for a 45-minute period. But in addition to that, we adopted lots of the methodologies mm-hmm. of mediated learning in our classroom organization mm-hmm. and everything that was going on in the school.
Hmm.
But now, there was just an amazing difference now. And so people could argue, but yeah. that's because you had a nice fancy looking building. But anyway, the difference between, we had the student body and the staff
mm-hmm.
kind of moved from that old building that was torn down to the new building. And of course we picked up some new people as well, because we were a little larger when we got into a new facility. But it was the same program that moved from one site to the other from, mm-hmm. But we added instrumental enrichment and we added FIE. And anyway, the difference between the culture in terms of student behavior, in terms of ability to see students making progress, it was just phenomenal. It was just a totally mm-hmm. different atmosphere.
Wow.
People could argue, well, that's because you had a fancy looking building. Well, that helped.
Yeah.
But it was because of the integrated use of mm-hmm. instrumental enrichment, mediated learning
mm-hmm.
amongst all staff members.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so first it was the classroom, and then for the IE class, and then we adopted the framework of an IE lesson. Teachers adopted that in the other content areas as well.
Oh.
Divided the lesson with the same concept of the providing the mediation, especially intentionality and transcendence mm-hmm. and meaning and all of that. And so it just became part of the whole philosophy of the school, and everybody mm-hmm. had the same terminology, everybody had mm-hmm. the same mm-hmm. awareness of what was happening. And it was interesting. One of the interesting things was to see the change in teachers.
I was going to ask if you had any skeptics to begin with.
With an E, you know, they were so much better as teachers. Mm. It was so wonderful to see. Not only did it improve the students, but it improved them.
Yeah.
And it improved also. And then when we had school-wide events, we learned that when we were going to have a school-wide event, for example, if something was coming up that was going to be important, I remember bringing in a violinist, we were kind of famous when we started out in our new building in North Omaha, and the city fathers loved us, and the Catholic community loved us, and everybody thought we were just wonderful because we were doing these great things with these children who had a lot of troubles. Most of them had been gone to another school first and then came to us as the second place or third place or whatever. So we had a lot of credibility and a lot of attention, you know. And so it was just a wonderful opportunity, and they came, and we had lots of people visiting us and wanting to know why we were able to do what we were doing. So we, you know, like, we didn't have a lot of data on last year of Dominican compared with the data in the first year of Flanagan. You know, we didn't do a lot of those kinds of things. You know, we didn't have that. We were from our own experience and from the way that students were able to be more successful. We could have. I followed Mildred Huffman's outline so very faithfully that in the meeting, in the manuals, you know, I was very, very very, very consistent with that. So I did some of those. So I showed those in Shores. When I went to Shores back in 1988, I took my videos along and I showed them to people. And other people saying, you know, your classes, it's nice to see you doing that, but your kids aren't high risk. Those kids are not high risk kids, you know? And I said, yes, they are. And they said,
oh, yes, they are.
They're acting like they're, you know.
Yeah.
So Lorna came to visit our show. I invited Lorna when we had our 10th anniversary of Atlantic High School. And we had a kind of a symposium. Asa Hilliard was the keynoter, and Lorna Williams was there as well. So as Lorna came, I said, when she first came, I said, okay, Lorna, I want you to really look at everything that's happening here and tell me if my students are high risk or if they're not high risk. And then when it was over, she said, you have high risk students, but they're not acting like high risk. Because the whole culture was so positive, you know, it was so integrated with IE and everything. So that was kind of an example of, a story example of the success.
I was training in the Netherlands and I was doing basic. And so I had a video where I showed teaching maybe a group of 10 or 12 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds. And I think I was doing identify emotions. And instead of the teachers asking me about the instrument, you know, what I was teaching, they said, how did you get them to behave? So they saw. And so it's wonderful to be able to explain that mediation helps do that, because it honors the child as a person who has a voice and whose opinion is respected. And they've not been treated like that before. They've always been patronized. Oh, you need to obey me. And here comes this teacher that looks at them differently, talks differently. And I think that level of respect brings out good behavior. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. And you've helped me cement that. You're agreeing with me.
Yes, and also I think that they're put at ease when they know what's going to be happening.
You know, yeah. So
the whole gesture of giving intentionality. This is where we're going. This is what we're going to do today. I think it kind of puts them at ease, gives them a kind of a focus.
Yes.
I used to think that the real key before I studied Feuerstein, I used to think that it was a valuable thing to have a lot of stuff happening with students. And then at the very end of the day, they say, oh, that's what it was all about. rather than say, this is what it's going to be all about, folks, and this is how I'm going to do it, and this is
yeah.
And So, but the whole concept of intentionality and purpose was something that I found that mediation brought about.
Yes.
Anyway, so the students were very different. It was very different in that. So, but I was in charge of Flanagan during all those years too. So
you could make it happen.
I kept the place. You know, I kept things going.
I bet you did.
Okay, and one of the things I learned was interesting. Okay, I trained the teachers. Okay, and put them in the classroom with the youngsters, and very quickly I could see where the teachers needed a little bit of help. Okay, they needed a little bit of assistance. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. You know, dealing with mental processes is not easy for adults either, mm-hmm. especially when you're so, you know, a teacher is so content oriented. Mm-hmm. So to back off and deal with process, and you know, mental, the cognitive functions and the thinking skills behind everything, that was a stretch. Mm-hmm. So I realized, first of all, I better get in there and do it myself, otherwise they're not going to stay with me. Mm-hmm. So after a semester, I always then, from that first semester on, I always had an IE class myself all the time.
Wow. There. Yeah, so you modeled it.
I was always teaching as well. And then, especially in terms of transcendence and bridging, teachers really often wanted to have some kind of help. And so I had a very wonderful colleague named Mary Fisher. So she and I then wrote the FIE mediation manual, which you might have seen. And it was published in 1987 or so.
Yes.
And for all of the original three-year program, we had a lesson plan and lots of bridging examples for every page of instrumental enrichment for all three levels.
Wow.
It was a big, thick book. So we and so we handed that to the teachers and said, okay, here's a help there, you know, here's some ideas that you can have.
Yeah.
And then other people found that valuable down through the day too. And then when I went to Shoreish in 1988, that was just a wonderful opportunity because that's the year that they presented the two-year version rather than the three-year version.
Yes.
3 years, you know, there were three, it was meant to be 3 years, now it's just 2 years of standard, right?
Yeah.
So we went through every instrument in that 1988 at Shoreish, and they showed what they were cutting and what they were not keeping and all that kind of stuff. And around the table was Reuben and Mildred, Francis Link, and all the key players of Forestine in America, and Lou was there, Lou Gray. It was just such a fascinating experience, you know, just wonderful. But then I said to myself, my handbook's already out of date now. It was for 3 years, and now it's down to two. But we were able to give a little handout with the three-year version and said, if you're using the two-year version, here's how you do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
we can still keep on doing.
Oh yeah, still applies. All those bridges and principles still apply.
So I realized that I had to teach it myself. I realized that the teachers needed help.
Yeah,
but it was always an effort, and without the firm commitment of the leader, it's hard to keep it going because everybody gets people get tired of all of the energy it takes to be a good IE teacher.
And in schools that, whether it's a Jewish school or a Christian school, schools that have that additional level of teaching religion or Bible, so you have that added to the curriculum. But yet I have found that it's the Christian schools that love those Jewish roots of the Feuerstein method. And sometimes I've told people, if you want to teach like Jesus taught, then you need to learn how to mediate, because he asked a lot of questions.
Oh, I know. He was mediating all the time, yes. Yeah, he was mediating all the time.
I taught a FIE as a college level course, a master's course for teachers. And I had a teacher, I said, write a paper and apply just the concept of mediation to anything you want, to teaching, to marriage, to something in your faith walk, I don't care. And a teacher came back with a paper I have kept to this day, that's been 15 years ago, a paper on how God mediated Adam and Eve in the garden.
Oh, I would love to see that.
I'll send it to you. The questions that God asked. It is one of the most delightful papers I've ever had submitted. And I'll have to send it to you. You'll really enjoy it.
Okay, now I think I don't think I completed that example I was going to give about bringing in this violinist that time, this famous violinist, you know. In terms of, you know, these were street children, inner city children, used to the rap and all that kind of thing. And so, you know, we learned that when we learned to do something special like that, we would have a mediated lesson, a school-wide mediated lesson about what was going to happen. Who was coming, what their expectations, background, religion, and then things would just always work smoothly. And before that, of course, you just never knew what was going to be happening when you brought somebody in.
Yeah.
I remember one time when the surrounding community started to experience some violence because of gangs. Gangs came to Omaha in 1988, and I had been at the Dominican, Atlantic High School for years before that. And so it caught everybody in Omaha off guard. No one was ready for that, including us. But, you know, just previous to prom, all of a sudden there was all this gang tension in the surrounding community. So we had to cancel prom. So you know how that goes over with children, right?
Yeah, not too good.
So anyway, I created and drafted this mediation lesson where we went through all the rational, you know, all the different things. And I remember one of my teachers coming up to me and says, "Well, if I never believed in IE before, I sure do now." She says, "I can't believe we pulled this off without all of the students being just furious and having this big crisis." But they understood. We had that mediated lesson about the need to deal with the gang activities and all that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So we learned to do all of the major happenings of the school in the context of a mediation.
Now, were your students coming from the community and homes? They had parents?
It depended. A lot of them were in foster care or things of that sort. And I even had a foster home for 19 of those years. When I was there,
I had
young men living with me. I had a foster home for a while, and but a lot of the kids were kind of in and out of places like that. They didn't come from, you know, I was the only residential part of that part of my program of the Flanagan High School experience. Most of them were people who were from the neighborhood.
Okay,
they would be sent by juvenile courts or something like that.
It was
pretty much a community school.
Yes.
A neighborhood school.
Yes. Gang members would have had access to your high school students and could have influenced them.
Oh, that's what I mean. That's how we found out because we found out about the gangs when one of a rival gang member came to the school with a gun to confront one of our students, and all of a sudden we said, "Wow, what's this all about?
What's going now?" Were they all boys at your school, or boys and girls?
Boys and girls.
You had both. You had both. Yeah. Okay.
One of the extra programs that we had that was one of the reasons why we survived when the old school was wiped out by the highway, and people said we got to keep that place alive. Back in 1975 or so, we developed a parenting program for young mothers. At the old Dominican High School.
Yeah.
And we first of all started out with classes, and then we brought in a nursery, and so mothers could bring their nursery. So when we built the new Father Flanagan High School, you know, we had a whole section that was designed for mothers to bring their babies in an extra.
Wow. In 1983.
Yeah, 1983. And then we had quality child care taking place, parenting classes for the young mothers.
Yeah.
And they bring their babies there, and they could go and nurse the babies during the day, and all of
that.
Everybody loved us in Omaha because of that. The people in town.
You took care of the whole child. You did it all.
When there was a possibility that we would be no longer there, people said, "No, we've got to keep that place." That was one of the main reasons why we were able to survive.
Yeah. Tell me your very favorite either page in Feuerstein or your very favorite thing, because you mediated hours and hours and hours of this program. And I'd just be curious, what was your favorite thing about that?
Well, I think organization of dots, I think, was the favorite. The whole concept of strategy, the whole concept of finding the purpose and of going through the, you know, experience of of setting the goal and seeing the options and doing the things and learning and activating. And, you know, I've always found dots to be extremely, extremely powerful.
I like to say it's the one we get our most bang for the buck.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, and some of my teachers who, you know, really had to struggle with IE sometimes would say they found dots okay, but it was hard to do some of the other instruments because they had to add so much in terms of mediation to make things work, you know.
Yes, so, yes. The program of comparisons is lost without good mediation.
Oh, yeah, I know. You have to do all this kind of mediation because you can get through the instrument very quickly and everything.
Yeah, yeah. So I loved going online and learning about Boys Town today. They are in several states, down in Florida, Rhode Island, a couple places I think in Nebraska, multiple campuses. And I remembered as when I was growing up. So when you, let's see, where would I have been? I would have been a resource teacher at a school here in Indiana when you were principal at Father Flanagan. So I didn't know anything about Feuerstein. And it's one of my biggest regrets looking back. I wish I would have had it when I taught all those children that struggled with learning. I've always worked with what I've said are the underdogs, the kids that are struggling. But I remember Boys Town. I remember the movie, Mickey Rooney and Spencer Tracy helped make Boys Town famous. And then the Hollies came out, I think it was in the late 60s, with a song, "He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother." And can you tell the story of, do you know the story of how that became the motto of Boys Town?
Yes, yes. I can't remember this. I can't remember the names for sure, but the names are there. Okay, so Father Flanagan himself found a boy carrying a crippled boy up the steps, okay, and said something to him about the fact that, you know, that was probably hard to do. And the boy who was carrying the other boy said, "He ain't heavy, Father, he's my brother."
Oh, yeah.
So because there was this crippled man that the students always carried up and down the steps. Okay.
Wow.
And so that became you know.
The motto.
The motto of Boys Town. Yeah, Boys Town has a wonderful history. And of course, we'll be constantly teaching the youngsters who come here now about all of that history and about how Father Flanagan started it all and everything. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of mediation happening without naming it mediation, of course. Mm-hmm. And they never did adopt Feuerstein's methodologies or instruments. Okay, but there's just a lot of teaching going on, I tell you, about how to behave and how to do things and a lot of talking. So and then the students who have come here now. And it's kind of interesting that when you, for me as a clergy person on site, conducting church services and maybe going into the classroom and speaking, you know, everybody looks like they're just perfectly well behaved, but you know, they were not being well behaved many times before they got here, and when they go back to their homes at night, they can be pretty tough. I tell you, but they are pretty well under control. But the whole organization of Boys Town now is organized so that students don't live in big dorms. Yeah. Boys and girls are here both. But every student lives in a home, a very nice, you know, nice physical home with a family teaching couple.
Yeah, beautiful.
And then an assistant maybe with the couple.
Yeah.
But they all are meant to experience family life. And so for so many of them, thinking they grow up in chaos in the inner cities and abuse and all that kind of, and all of a sudden they come here and they got all this, you know, really, really deep home life kind of thing. And they learn how to, you know, the home that has to take care of the lawn and all that kind of thing, you know, all the kind of stuff that they would never experience in their chaotic lives before. that they need to experience. And there was a psychologist who gave a speech, who's on site, who gave a kind of a pep talk a while ago, and he was talking about what Boys Town gives to youth. Hmm. He said, first thing you give to them, and you don't realize how important this is, you give them safety.
Oh.
For these youths, they can walk outside the door, and they don't have to look and see who's around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. This is a safe place. Mm-hmm. It's a mild parameter.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, you know, it's kind of a insular community in the midst of Omaha. Mm-hmm. But it's a safe place. There are no walls around you. And there are no fences, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, kids, it's not like they're in prison. A lot of them have come from juvenile prisons.
Yeah, they've been incarcerated. Yeah. I loved watching two of the teenagers gave a tour of the campus, and it was it was a delightful video. So I would encourage our listeners to this podcast episode to go to the website and visit and see the incredible work that is being done with and by Boys Town across our country. It's pretty remarkable. Father Flanagan started something really amazing.
Yep.
He did,
but the off-campus school didn't last forever. So I was there for 10 for 11 of those years.
Yeah,
they got a new assignment from the archdiocese to open and to found a suburban Catholic high school, College Prep. So I went from the inner city with horse, you know, went to the College Prep. So that was a real experience too. That school is now thriving. It was 31 years ago that happened.
Wow.
I can't believe it started the 31st year of this year. But the school now is thriving, the suburban school is thriving.
Yeah,
but
anyway, wonderful.
After, about 4 or 5 years after I left Father Flanagan High School, then the Boys Town, for reasons I don't know because I wasn't on the scene at that time, then they stopped operating that off-campus school and just focused on the school here on campus. So.
Okay. Yeah, things change. Things change. Yeah.
And it's so true. You know, if you're going to do FIE in a school, okay, if you're a principal and want to do it, you can get it done.
Yes.
If you're just a lone teacher, it might be tough.
Yeah.
Yet then, you know, when the people who are really for it leave the site, then it, you know, lots of times it doesn't continue as FIE place.
And that's true of any reading program or math program. So that's not unusual. The leader sets the pace. And what you were describing sounds to me like what Reuven Feuerstein called a shaping and modifying environment, because you had everyone trained. Did you ever hear from any of your graduates that did IE all 4 years?
Just yesterday. Oh yeah. Okay. I get this all the time. Just yesterday, I was at a Dairy Queen here in Omaha, and here comes this young man. Well, he's no longer young; he's middle aged, or you know, he's got the gray hair and wrinkles and everything like that. And he comes over. He recognized me. And we chat a little bit about things, you know. And he said, well, you know, you got to use your IE. In other words, you got to do things.
Wow. And they still live in the community. A lot of people in the Midwest are pretty rooted. I know I travel all over the world, but I love coming home to Indiana. My roots are here. I was even born in Ohio, but I've spent my life practically here in Indiana. And so home is home. And I know one of my favorite leaders that was my superintendent when I was a principal. She's the one that gave me my chance to become a principal. And her name was Kay Novotny, and she was from Nebraska. She follows Nebraska football. She is a Nebraska fan still to this day. So I think once we get our roots, we sometimes really love being where it feels like home. And so you've been there. Yeah.
The Midwest seems to be more conducive to that than
We love where we live. Yeah.
We love our roots.
We do. So do you think that the world today still needs Feuerstein?
Oh, even more than ever. Much more than ever. The world is a chaos. Much more so than ever. And in terms of tendency to do everything digitally and on the screen and mm-hmm. you know, conversation and discussion and, mm-hmm. and you know, mediation is just not happening. You know, when I was at Scott Catholic High School, the suburban school, we did not. When I went there, I instituted a freshman course called Character Skills, where we included thinking skills in some Feuerstein mediation philosophy. And the teachers had all been trained with Thai, so we had some instruments that we actually did with the youngsters. And so, you know, but all of that nurturing and all of that mediation, it happens. And I kept saying to myself, you know, I hope this lasts as long as it can, but I just knew there would be some day when a finance committee person would say, why don't we have this extra course here? It costs too much money. We've got to get rid of that.
Yeah.
But it's still there after 31 years. It's still there. Because it has had so much of this culture of Scott Catholic as well.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's exciting.
I'm so excited for that, yes. But I think the world needs Feuerstein even more than ever.
Even more than ever.
More than ever. And when you think of AI, artificial intelligence, how are we, without having the ability to use critical thinking skills, how are we going to know of anything's value or of anything's truthfulness, right?
Yes.
It's going to be so difficult for people.
Yeah, the Feuerstein Institute is going to have, for those of you that are listening, if this is prior to February 2024, they are hosting a series of lectures calling for papers for people to come and contribute to this idea, human mediation in the world of artificial intelligence. And we know all this technology is here to stay. We're not going to make it go away. So how do we balance it? How do we keep mediation still on the table to keep our human aspect of how we interact with one another? So it's what you brought up is an absolute perfect topic, and the Institute is exploring it. So you're right on. Well, I'm going to close. This has been fabulous. I wanted to ask, what else do you have to share or say before I do my farewell here?
Well, I told you that FIE was part of lots of things in Flanagan, huh?
Yes.
Lots of cultural life. So even to the extent that we had a talent contest at one time at the school.
Okay.
So I participated and performed an IE rap.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm going to do the IE rap for you.
Okay, let's hear it. Here we go.
You know, when I did it live, you know, there were students behind with their music and the beat, blah, 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 you know. And I was up there, and there's a refrain in the middle of the, as the rap goes on.
Yeah.
There's a refrain, and as it went along, when I would get to that refrain, the students started chiming in. It was so much fun.
Oh, my word.
Here we go.
Yeah, let's hear it.
There's a great big secret at Flanagan High that every other school is fixing to try. It's a secret that will set your whole mind free. It's a class that here we call IE. Now, it should be no surprise to you that all kinds of folks come to look at your school. There are great big problems in education, and everyone's searching for recommendations. Modern life dumps on us like pollution, and few people offer a real solution. Feuerstein came up with a tremendous find when he discovered that the answer is in the mind. Everything else in life comes and goes, the exciting times and sad times of woes, through ups and downs of our experiences, only the mind stays above the interferences. So when today's students show no real gumption, give them a chance to learn the cognitive functions. Teach them to practice those parts of thinking that will always keep them free of sinking. So if you can't seem to ever find the right spot, you can learn the connections and organization of dots. And if you don't know which side of life to face, you can learn what to do in orientation in space. And if choosing one from many makes you despair some, you can learn to choose correctly by doing comparisons. And if parts of your life defy rational conception, you can put them together in analytic perception. So don't ever say that you can't make it or don't even think that you'll have to fake it. For when life's troubles force you to the brink, you can say, just a moment, let me think. And if arranging objects brings you complications, you can learn to classify in categorizations. And if sense is lacking in session after session, you can learn about patterns and numerical progressions. Mm-hmm. And if you can't notice details of life's functions, you can learn precision by doing instructions. And if bureaucracy brings you much frustration, you can learn about systems and family relations. So don't ever say that you can't make it, or don't even think that you'll have to fake it. For when life's troubles force you to the brink, you can say, just a minute, let me think. And if projecting life's future is without foundation, you'll think of way ahead and transitive relations. And if slavery to the concrete keeps your mind in prison, you'll use abstract thinking through syllogism. And if you're always late with your obligations, you'll learn about time and temporal relations. And if life's layers wrap you up in a bind, you'll love representational stencil design. So don't ever say that you can't make it, or don't even think that you'll have to fake it. For when life's troubles force you to the brink, you can say, just a moment, let me think. So now you know why other teachers in town like to plan again to look around. So when you catch visitors having look-see, just hold your head high and use your IE. And when Tuesdays and Thursdays come rolling around and the alarm wakes you up with that clanging sound, jump out of bed and rush to this high school, because IE class will make you oh so cool. So don't ever think that you can't make it, and don't even think that you'll have to fake it. For when life's troubles force you to the brink, you can say, just a moment, let me think.
I love it. I don't know. I think we're going to have to bring that back. You're going to send me a copy, and I think that's going to go viral. I happen to know a really cool black guy, my Kibwe Cooper. He could put that to rap, and let's re-release it. Are you willing?
Of course.
Send it to me. It's going to go viral, James. It's going to go viral. It's going to be great. Oh, my gosh. Thank you. This has been
so much fun to do that.
Oh, you haven't done that whole rap for a long time, have you?
No.
Yeah, so I'm so glad that you got that back out again. That, like, was the highlight of this whole interview, though I loved it all. And any last words of wisdom for us?
My best wishes to all the people in the IE program who are out there actively doing it now. I value the work that you do so much, and just support it 100%. And thank all of the forces of goodness in the world, including my belief in God, bringing IE to my life and to the lives of so many Spencers. And so God bless Forrest Hine and all his people.
Thank you, James. I'm going to close with some of the words from the song that the Hollies released about called He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother. It starts, "The road is long with many a winding turn that leads us to who knows where and who knows when. But I'm strong, strong enough to carry him. He ain't heavy. He's my brother. So on we go. His welfare is of my concern. No burden is he to bear. We'll get there. For I know he would not encumber me. He ain't heavy. He's my brother." So thank you, James. You are my brother, and I appreciate you greatly. So thank you for being on Build-A-Brain.
Thanks for listening to the Build-A-Brain podcast. If you're wanting to know more information on how to build a brain, please visit the website for the MindCap Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana at www.mind-cap.org. That's www.mind-cap.org. Children and adults from across the United States and Canada have found the cognitive help they needed at the MindCap Center. The specialized team is trained in all levels of the Feuerstein program and can literally help you or your child build a better brain. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.